Slug Nation, on the phone right now, a special guest, Merrill Garbus of Toon Yards. You've heard us play tracks on K-Slug, including some new material from their latest album. Merrill, welcome to the show. How is it going?
Thank you. It is going great. Thanks for having me.
And you're going to be up here in Humboldt on Wednesday at Humboldt State University for a special discussion titled Radical Thoughts in Multimedia Arts. Have you been up here before?
Never, no. I've heard of it so much, but never.
Oh, I hope you enjoy it. Lots of green. Lots of many kinds of green. Mm-hmm. But lots of good people, too. Promises.
That's what we hear. That's what we hear.
Is the discussion something you've been taking to different cities and different campuses?
You know, no, but this was an opportunity that Isabel Sanchez, a student at HSU, came to one of our performances and thought it would be something that the students up there would want. And as a result, it's gotten me really thinking about how to connect work that I was already doing around the lyrics of our last album and trying to provide resources around anti-racism, social change movements, information that people really wanted to know or are wanting to know, that kind of connect with our lyrics. So it's still, this is kind of the first process of bringing this to people in this form instead of bringing a performance like we usually do, to bring a discussion and invite people to offer, you know, their current desires and needs and experiences.
I think a fantastic opportunity because this is a very artistic place, Humboldt County. It's very small, but full of art, full of music. And definitely in the past few years, you've seen the discussion of racism come up in this very small community, as there have been a couple of incidents that have sparked that discussion, and you see fights on all sides. So perfect. You're coming to the perfect place for it. And the lecture on Wednesday, it is going to involve subjects that people may call sensitive. Some people feel there's no need to discuss privilege, racism, or appropriation in music. As many genres, they do derive inspiration from all over the world. When did that hit home for you? When did you feel the need to self-reflect and address?
You know, for me, it has always been a part of Toon Yards. And I'd say that, you know, my kind of radical awakening, if you want to call it that, was really early on in my kind of teenage years. I had the privilege of going to spend a semester in Kenya when I was a junior in college, and that kind of synthesized for me a lot of things around, you know, what wasn't even being called white privilege at that moment in 1999, 2000, at least not in the circles I was aware of, but there was, I definitely had a sense of my privilege as a white student and a white student who could not only afford to travel to Africa, but that had this, had a very specific power of being a person from a university in the U.S. going to study in Kenya and living with host families and all the power dynamics that were very clear to me, making that a part of my educational life and what a privilege that was. So when I started Toon Yards, you know, 5 or 6 years later, I was very clear that I was extremely influenced by music from the African diaspora, and Black music from the States is a part of all American pop music. So, from the beginning, the first Toon Yards album, there are songs that do explore in various ways my being white and taking a lot of influence from Black music. So it's always been there. And you know, the thing about music and creativity is that it's a place where these real subtleties and nuances can be explored. In some songs, I'm very explicit about what I'm talking about, and in others, I'm using a song to explore a lot of ickiness that is kind of hard to put into words, and that's what music and creativity, I think, is so great for, is exploring what's not so easy to put into words.
Have you faced any admonishment or criticism in regards to wanting to discuss your views on racism in the music world? Because some people are just like, well, you know what? It's inspiration. It's a tribute. Let it be, without actually delving deep into what taking some of these elements do mean to the cultures that they originate from. Have you ever faced any pushback in discussing?
Yeah. I mean, I think some reviews of our last album, you know, basically said, why is she talking about this? Or music, pop music is not the place to talk about this. I think most people, you know, in a lot of ways would prefer to push conversations about race. I mean, I should say most white people. I'm not sure, you know, I'm speaking from a white perspective. So I would say most people that I am encountering in the very white indie rock world would prefer, or are as uncomfortable as most white people are about talking about race. We don't have the language, or we feel we don't have the language. And there's also this thing that comes up about, you know, separating political from everything else.
Oh, yes. Those folks who are like, just stick to your day job. You're a musician. Me.
Exactly.
You're a human being as well. What?
Right.
When does the line? At dusk, you become human once again.
Oh, exactly. Right. Right. As if it's to be contained. Yeah. And I think especially now, because people are so, you know, there's a lot of fatigue around how intense things are politically now. Mm-hmm. And so there are a lot of people who would rather, you know, for instance, we got the opportunity to open for David Byrne, and there were all these Talking Heads fans that we were performing for. And, you know, I was singing every night. We would do the song of ours called Colonizer. Mm-hmm. And I would say, I use my white woman's voice to tell stories of travels with African men. And you could kind of see the front row people who had paid a lot of money for those tickets, you know, almost exclusively white folks who were, you know, not, maybe they were coming there to hear Burning Down the House and not this, you know, and just like those expressions, or, you know, a lot of people, well, you know, David Byrne also did Janelle Monáe's that song, Hell You Talking About, which mm-hmm. was the thing that she did for the Women's March. And as an encore, you know, a lot of the Talking Heads, not a lot, but there were a lot of people really in support of hearing these names of people of color killed by state violence. That's what the song is. It's just their songs, their names, and saying, say their name, say her name, say his name. And it really called upon the audience to get involved. And there were a couple of moments where, you know, people, some guy put his, basically threw his beer up on the stage and walked out. There's a lot of, like, again, this isn't the place for politics. And so, yes, that is all. That's a long answer to your question. It's like, yeah, there's a lot of resistance to this. And that's okay. You know, I'm still going to keep doing this.
Exactly. Now, It is often, as a woman of color myself, experienced it on a weekly basis, that when a person of color raises concerns about appropriation, racism, etc. in the media, it is seen as complaining, maybe wanting more than we deserve as far as the respect that we want. But when a white person acknowledges racism, there is ovation, even reverence. How would you, being white, address this problem, being someone who has actively tried to educate yourself, share what you've learned, has tried to self-reflect? What would you say to people who take up this stance that people of color, they're already getting what they want? Why do they need more? But when white people acknowledge it, it's like giving them a gold star on their homework. What would you say to people as far as trying to maybe create a balance between them, all of it?
Yeah, that's a thing. I mean, I think just to say it the way that you just said it, like this happens. This is a pattern. The pattern is person of color voices concern and also voices experience, and gets, you know, a lot of admonishment for that. And then white person does basically the same thing and gets a lot of applause for it. I would say I'm, you know, this is a tricky position for me because this is, these are reasons why I really think about being a public, white public figure. And the problem is that part of doing this work is not expecting and not wanting or needing to have that public part of it, like public acknowledgement. What good is it if I am a white person centering myself again in anti-racist work?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think what you just did of identifying that this is what happens and this is the tendency, then people who engage in this can go, oh, yeah, I guess I'm doing that thing. I think, you know, there's a tendency, and I love this term, white fragility.
Uh-huh.
White fragility can encompass these things like, hey, this will probably happen. You know, you'll probably get defensive. You probably are going to have a harder time hearing criticism from a person of color than another white person. Hey, you might feel like crying. You might feel like lashing out. You might feel angry. When we kind of label these things as tendencies, you know, and say, welcome to the world of white fragility, then I think we have more of a chance of being able to take, to have a little bit of distance and perspective, even on our own behavior. But I think this is like, you know, this is something, it's really scary. I mean, I see it on Twitter a lot. I see it on social media, a ton of that exact same pattern that you're talking about. And you know, it also a kind of fear of anger,
mm-hmm.
you know, a fear that people of color come, you know, are voicing their experiences, your experiences, mm-hmm. and, you know, the ability to listen versus getting defensive, getting, you know, why should I have anything to say about someone's experience? They're just voicing their experience.
Absolutely. This is very nice to hear. I just have to take a moment. I will make a mark in this just on a personal note, and it's been very, very difficult. Thank you very much for that.
I'm sorry. I hear it's been real. I mean, yeah, I hear it's been tense, and that's in this day and age, that just must be a very difficult place to be.
Okay. Lots of things in my eyes. Next.
I'm sure.
Next question. Woo! I got this. I'm professional.
This is amazing, by the way, that this is going to be on the radio.
Ooh, I'm good. Ooh, all right. Serious question.
Bring it.
The current political climate has made lines very clear in regards to racism and its continued presence in this country, let alone the whole world. So how did this influence the latest record, I Can Feel You Creep Into My Private Life?
That's a good question. I mean, it's all, you know, it's all steeped in 2015, 2016, 2017, I was DJing in downtown Oakland on the night of the election. And I think that kind of encapsulated a lot of what making this album was for me. But you know, I think what I'm coming to understand and actually what I'm fearful of is I'm kind of fearful of what happens when, you know, in 2020, I guess I'm very fearful of what happens when Trump is not elected again, and what happens, you know, specifically to white quote unquote liberal people. I think there's these major blind spots. You know, that's why I like the title of that movie, Blind Spotting, so much. I just thought, like, yeah, that's exactly, there's this, there are things that we as people who identify as white in this country just don't see. And so a lot of these things get put into partisan politics that But I think what happens is that, you know, like you said, there's this thing of like being thought of as really radical or really left wing. But is it radical and left wing to like you said, be human? Like, what is wrong? Like, what is wrong with us that's suddenly radical to not want to tear gas children? So that is what, you know, that I understand, you know, when people say things are so far to the right, it's that kind of definition of right and left. And that, you know, there's a song called Coast to Coast on this last album that, you know, the lyrics are right, left fantasy. And I think that for me, that came from, wait a second, what is that from anyway? What do those terms mean? And how are we blinded by those labels? How are we blinded by picking a side and sticking so hard to that side? Because I think, you know, this is kind of, I hear this a lot, and maybe it's cliche now, but, you know, I think we as human beings do have a lot of common needs and desires. Like, we want safety for ourselves and our family. We want a home. We want food on the table. We want all these things. And where have we really lost sight of how we want to treat each other? And really, like, how we want to be as humans on the planet. I think that there's a lot of BS in the talking around politics.
Yes. What advice would you have for people who, after hearing this interview, after going to your lecture, may feel conflicted or even uncomfortable, as people tend to with these subjects?
Or even uncomfortable. Yeah, right. Yeah, I feel uncomfortable. Do you? I mean, like, I feel like this stuff is really, it's so tender that the point is a discomfort.
Yes.
And that's something that I really learned from people. Yeah, people who have learned so much from around being a white person in anti-racist work is, if you're not feeling uncomfortable, then something's probably wrong.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so how then do we manage discomfort? You know, and for me, that's where practices around mindfulness, meditation, breath work, all these things, which, by the way, we will be employing during the discussion.
Wonderful.
So that we're all, you know, we're all taking care of ourselves and letting the stuff move through us, you know, including the discomfort, just moving through it. But yeah, we need to stick in that place. And, you know, for me these days, with the climate reports coming out and, you know, so much state violence in the news every day, I am personally in a constant state of discomfort, and I would be worried about myself if I wasn't. Mm-hmm. I think that the other option is numbing out and living in some kind of fantasy. So for me, that means, okay, then how do I build resilience around feeling discomfort? And how do I spend every day taking care of myself, knowing that a lot of what I'm seeing and a lot of what I'm feeling is going to be discomfort?
Absolutely. Oh, yes. So happy. Because when people are like, it just blows my mind when people, because to me, realizing that you're uncomfortable, you've just absorbed something new, something that just blew your mind. Mm-hmm. Why would you not want that all the time?
Yeah, totally. Well, I think people are unused to that. Mm-hmm. I think people are trained to, and again, you know, probably speaking mostly from a white perspective, that there's a training around all things should lead to me being comfortable. Mm-hmm. Like my job, my home life, my relationships, that they should all feel good all the time. Cause that's the point, is like, we're feeling good here in America. So I think that's the sense of growth and actually upheaval too, right? Like, learning something new these days for me, a lot of that is like a real upheaval of my notions about myself and how I'm going to be in this world. It's like really big stuff.
I want to thank you so much for joining me today. This has been an absolute honor and a joy. Thank you so much, Meryl.
Thank you so much. Oh my gosh. Same. Thanks for the great discussion. And maybe see you there.
Yeah, I haven't bought my tickets yet. I've been trying all day to try and like navigate my way through all of my work. And I'm like, I try to get all my event stuff done a week ahead of time. But I would absolutely, absolutely be honored to go. So I'm going to get on that today. I really am, because
awesome.
I want to hear more. KSLUG Nation, if you want to hear more Radical Thoughts in Multimedia Arts at the Kate Buchanan Room at Humboldt State University, Wednesday, December 5th at 7 p.m. Check out centerarts.humboldt.edu for tickets. And again, Meryl, thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
KSLUG Nation, we will be back. Promises.